Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Well, we've got a great show ahead of us tonight. It's a repeat of a documentary broadcast on the bank holiday in October, presented by Eric Dempsey. It's the story of the ring ouzel. That's a bird that's classified as red listed, which means it's a bird of high conservation value here in Ireland. It's thought to be down to a handful of breeding pairs left in this country. In this documentary, Eric reveals the story of this elusive species and the efforts being made to protect its fragile habitat.
It's early April, and I'm on Cairnsore Point, the southeast corner of Ireland, and it's been a fantastic day so far with lots of migrants arriving in and the southerly winds. I'm walking up here to the old signal tower among the wind turbines, and I'm looking for a very special bird that had been seen here a little earlier this morning by someone else.
My name is Eric Dempsey. I'm a photographer, an author, and, though it still catches me by surprise, a birder for almost 50 years. In that time, I've witnessed extraordinary changes in Ireland's bird life. I've watched little egrets spread across the country, turning from rare visitors into familiar residents. I've welcomed the arrival of great spotted woodpecker, now drumming in the woods near my home in County Wicklow. I've witnessed the decline of the corncrake, the curlew, and the extinction of the corn bunting. Each of these moments, arrival, return, and disappearance, has shaped how I see the natural world. Today, I'm on a mission to see a ring ouzel, a bird once common here, but now barely clinging on.
There it is, right in front of me. Oh, yes. That is a stunner. That is a beautiful. It's a full adult male. It's just landed on the wall. It's about 100 metres from you. Now, if you can imagine, a ring ouzel is, it's a first cousin of a blackbird. So picture a male blackbird. Oh, that bird is beautiful. Picture a male blackbird with slightly longer wings, and every feather on those wings have a beautiful silver lining to them. And then the flank feathers, the slight silvery edges to them. But the most striking feature is this beautiful white crescent across the breast. And even the bill, it's more yellow than, oh, it's looking at me, it's more yellow than orange. And this is a bird of the mountain uplands. Oh, it's just flown. The local blackbird has just moved it on. Obviously wasn't impressed with its more fancy cousin on Cairnsore Point. But these birds, oh, this is the first one I've seen in Ireland for several years. Like 25 years ago, 30 years ago, these birds were birds I would see every year up in places like the Wicklow Mountains. And I'm looking at this bird, and if I'd seen that 20 years ago, I would have considered it was probably migrating up to the Wicklow Mountains or over to Mayo or to Donegal or over to the Kerry Reeks or somewhere of that nature. But in the last 20 years, the population has seen a drastic decline, and we are now looking at just one breeding pair that were found in 2024. And while I'm delighted to see this bird, I'm absolutely thrilled to see this ring ouzel, it's also it's a little saddening to think that our Irish ring ouzels have declined to such an extent that the only ring ouzel I will probably see will be a migrant bird like this.
It's early May, and I'm back in the Wicklow Mountains. I'm following the narrow track that leads down into the steep-sided valley of Glenmalure. The gorse is blazing yellow across the slopes opposite, and the Avonbeg River rushes through the valley below, its sound rising and falling with the wind. This place is familiar. One I've returned to many times over the years, especially in late spring when ring ouzels nested in this remote landscape. When they were here, their songs would carry across the valley, filling the air, bouncing off the slopes, and making Glenmalure feel wilder and more alive. The song of the ring ouzel is unmistakable. A series of clear, pure, fluty notes.
Well, I can remember the first time I heard a ring ouzel sing. It would have been at Loch Bray. I'd gone up, I'd heard that there were ring ouzels still there. This was probably 40 years ago. And sure enough, I heard the song before I saw the birds. And it was an incredibly beautiful, simple, desolate song, but unmistakable and very fitting for the harsh landscape, that bare mountain. And yeah, it's a really beautiful song. I was very happy to get a chance to record one many years later.
Killian Mullarney is a world-renowned bird expert and a key member of the Sound Approach, an innovative team dedicated to capturing and understanding bird sounds in their natural habitats. The recording we're listening to now was made by Killian, and it beautifully captures the haunting, fluty quality of this elusive mountain thrush.
It's certainly much simpler. I mean, it's just a few notes repeated. It's nothing like as elaborate as a blackbird, but it has a recognisable, the tone of a thrush, that rich, full tone. But really, it's quite unmistakable compared to a blackbird. It's a very different song.
When was the last time you heard one singing in Ireland?
Oh God, you got me there. Probably sometime in the early 80s, perhaps.
Yeah.
I've heard them calling since then, migrants.
Yeah, the migrant check sort of call, yeah. But not the song.
No, not a song. And I'm not sure, living in Wexford, I'm going to get much chance to hear that again.
Killian, thank you very much for sharing that wonderful recording and for just giving us your memories and your insight to the beautiful song of ring ouzel.
Not at all. It's a pleasure. Nice to think about them again.
It's been 6 weeks since I saw the ring ouzel at Cairnsore Point, a coastal sighting of a migrant moving through Ireland, far from the uplands they favour. According to my notes, the last time I heard a ring ouzel sing in Wicklow was on the 19th of May 2001, over two decades ago. That long silence weighs heavily, and it makes me more determined than ever to find out what's been happening.
Yeah, certainly the population, you know, in the last 150 years has completely collapsed in Ireland, you know, from the time of Usher and Warren in 1900 with their Birds of Ireland. At that stage, at the end of the 19th century, ring ouzel were apparently breeding in all but five counties. That even lowland counties, which is hard to believe these days, you know. But by the time, certainly they were declining throughout the 20th century as well. So by the time of the first bird atlas in 68-72, they were already only confined to some of the mountain areas like Kerry, Donegal and Wicklow at that site. So there was a very large scale decline.
Dr. Alan Mee is an ornithologist who has been studying the ring ouzel for almost 20 years.
It's a little bit complex. There are multiple factors. So we know that a lot of work has been done in the UK. Their population is also declining at the same rapid rate as in Ireland. But, you know, they're coming from a much higher base, so they still have thousands of pairs, even though the decline is just as rapid. So there's a lot of work been done in the UK, a lot of good science being done in the UK to try and determine, you know, are the causal factors of decline on the breeding grounds or on the wintering grounds. But the conclusion is that there are a number of drivers, but one of the biggest is habitat loss.
Okay.
And it looks as if the same factors are operating in Ireland as in the UK. So we know that things like climate change are having issues because it's ringousel, or the population in Ireland are at the edge, right at the edge of the ringousel range. So if there's any changes in the population,
of course, it's right on the western edge of Europe, yeah, in many ways. Yes.
So the biggest pressures are going to be on these populations,
okay,
especially the populations that are small anyway.
Yeah.
They're probably the ones that are going to be under pressure of, you know, local extinction. But we know now that some of the biggest factor is probably loss of our heather cover in upland areas.
And what's causing that loss?
It's undoubtedly, this didn't happen overnight. It's been happening for, yeah, a while. Like I started looking at ringousel when I came back from California to Ireland. I started monitoring the population in 2007.
Okay.
And I started looking at ringousel in the Reeks because I just happened to be living at the foot of the Reeks.
So County Kerry, yeah, yeah.
So what do I do when I'm not chasing eagles? You know, so,
yeah,
let's go up the Reeks and find out what's going on with ringousel. So I started monitoring the population in 2008. We had, in that first year, had 11 singing males.
Wow.
But I know now some of those were migrants.
Yeah.
Birds do sing on migration and keep going and don't necessarily breed. But by over the next few years, the population was hovering around 4 to 5 pairs. But by 2019, they were gone.
So in 12 years, it went from 5 pairs,
yeah,
to zero.
5 pairs to zero. And on the face of it, like the habitat didn't look any different from,
yeah,
when I started in the Reeks. So there's obviously, there are all things happening, like climate change impacting maybe a population at the periphery.
And how is climate change impacting the population?
Well, one of the possibilities is it's having effect. Drier summers seem to be having an impact on ringousel, which stands to reason because they're feeding their chicks a lot in the nest before they fledge on earthworms.
Okay.
And these become quite hard to access in dry weather. And also, there also does seem to be an effect of winters in, you know, wintering in North Africa. There are possibilities there as well that the habitat change there could be having an effect because they're quite dependent on juniper berries,
okay,
on the wintering grounds. So there's a number of things, but really the common denominator throughout Ireland seems to be habitat degradation. Loss of heather cover, they like a habitat mosaic, they like the cover of heather and shrubs to nest in. Obviously it provides them some protection, maybe from the weather, but especially from predators, but they like to feed in the short grass mosaics amongst the heather. And those, you see the hills in the former breeding areas now, they're largely gone from a nice mix of heather and little grassy areas to grass moorland.
Well, and is that from overgrazing?
Is that one of the issues? Overgrazing is the issue.
Okay.
Is the huge issue.
Okay.
Really, when you look at it habitat-wise, that is the number one issue.
Okay.
Overgrazing by sheep and deer.
Okay.
Some of the glens that formerly held ringousel, you know, not that long ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, are now completely grass moorland. There are no ringousels in recent times. And unfortunately, if we don't do something fast, the few sites that we now know are still hold ringousel, like,
yeah,
in Donegal, they're going to go the same way.
As has been mentioned, the ringousel is a migratory species, making a remarkable journey each spring from North Africa and southern Spain to the uplands of Ireland. Though no larger than a blackbird, it crosses vast distances and harsh terrains to reach remote breeding grounds in places like Donegal. But its journey is growing more perilous. If its mountain habitats disappear and the climate continues to shift, this thrush faces even greater challenges. Its survival depends not just on endurance, but on the resilience of the landscape it needs for nesting.
Would you believe my very first job with Birdwatch Ireland, which I won't quite say how many years ago, but it was many years ago. I was employed on a survey called the Upland Bird Survey, and we were tasked with going out to resurvey areas that were known to support ring ousel. So yeah, my very first experience back then was in the northwest of Ireland, visiting some of the most incredible locations, very remote, going out very early in the morning, listening for that beautiful evocative call that the ring ousel
has. It's a beautiful song, isn't it?
It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. And
it sort of captures the mountains, doesn't it?
It captures the mountains. It's their domain, yeah. And they utilise that sort of natural amphitheatre that a lot of the locations where they breed to the maximum. And back then, I mean, I would have said that they were not necessarily flourishing, but we did have a lot more ring ousel back in the sort of early 2000s than we do now, of course, which is very disheartening, I suppose you could say, and to kind of think about what we've lost.
Yes.
So quickly.
Sinead Cummins is part of the Scientific Advice and Research Directorate in the National Parks and Wildlife Service. In the beautiful surroundings of the Wicklow National Park, Sinead elaborated on the status of ring ousels.
Ring ousel are a summer migrant. They arrive here, I think peak numbers come in April. Looking at records from, you know, Irish birding and various sources like that, we tend to see peak passage in springtime around end of March, beginning of April, and then again in the autumn when they leave, sort of September, October time. But when they arrive in, they settle in to their territories, which are now exclusively in very remote upland locations. And I suppose in terms of what they need, it's a mixture. It's a sort of very secure, safe nesting site, which, you know, typically now is steep-sided cliffs and above, you know, beautiful sort of lush valleys in areas where we have that left. Heather is very important in terms of just a sort of heather or bilberry from the point of view of sort of nesting, but also providing food to particularly to adults and to young once they've fledged the nest. But also nice grazed areas of mineral rich grasslands, which we've lost a lot of course, through overgrazing, you know, by sheep and deer. And also, of course, we've lost a lot of habitat through changes in our upland landscapes. A lot of afforestation in the last 50, 60 years. That's directly resulted in habitat loss, but also those areas now act as a sink for a huge predator population.
Of course, yeah.
And as you know, ring ousel, a lot of our upland bird species are ground nesting, and they are suffering huge losses as a result of that sort of predation pressure, which hasn't helped, you know, their situation at all. But of course, they are migratory as well. So we're, you know, besides sort of pressures in our upland landscapes like overgrazing or afforestation and even recreational pressure now as people explore, it's becoming so, particularly, I think, in the last 5 or 6 years, as people are sort of, you know, with the pandemic, I think it brought a lot of people into the great outdoors for that sort of health and well-being benefits. And there's lots of positives to that, you know, in getting people outdoors. But I suppose in some parts of the country now, we are seeing a bit of conflict, human wildlife conflict, in areas which have become more accessible, you know, through trails, maybe through forest tracks, and you're bringing more and more humans into that environment that, you know, before previously would have been a lot quieter. And also, I suppose, look, a lot of people might choose to, you know, bring their dogs.
Of course, that's another big issue with dogs.
It can be, for a ground nesting species, dogs off leads is a problem.
Yeah.
For sure. So
they're being hit on every level, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. It's I think the ring ousel is sort of you know, people talk about the canary in the coal mine, but they're the species now that is closest really to extinction risk, and it's very concerning because they really are representative of a whole cohort of species that have declined in both range and population dramatically in the last 40, 50 years.
And is it just Ireland? How are they doing across Europe? Like, you know, the UK, we sort of know that the numbers have gone down, but in other parts of Europe?
It's a good question, Eric.
And is it an Irish problem?
It's definitely, I suppose, been more pronounced in Ireland because their population here was always I suppose, at the edge of their range. And yes. So it wasn't as, they weren't as numerous as they would be in the UK. But they have seen significant losses too, yeah, in the last sort of 3-4 decades of upwards of 30%. So it's a story that is echoing our nearest neighbours. And then you raise a good point about how they're doing in mainland Europe. And I'm not a taxonomist, but I know that ring ousel, the ring ousel that occur in Ireland, the race that occurs in Ireland, yes, in the UK, does differ from some of our mainland.
It's a sort of an eastern race.
Yeah. Yes. And I think, so, you know, the ring ousel that you're seeing or hearing in Switzerland is a different race to, okay, the one that you're hearing and seeing.
Are there
the
wintering? Are their wintering grounds the same, or are they under pressure in the wintering grounds as well?
Yeah.
And where do Irish ring ousels winter?
It's again excellent question, and I suppose we do tend to always sometimes rely on information from ringing studies, which, yeah, have been hugely valuable to kind of recoveries of ring birds tell us a lot. And previously, a lot of the recoveries from the UK and Ireland were either in southern Spain or in Morocco, yes, and eastern part of Algeria, okay, in the Atlas Mountains. So, yeah, they tend to overwinter there. Juniper forests, I think, play a very important role, okay, in supporting, yeah, the population through the non sort of breeding season, the wintering season. And I think in Scotland, 15 or so years ago, they attached geolocators to, okay, adult ring ousel, using these little backpacks.
Yeah, tiny little things. They're getting lighter and lighter. And amazing.
The technology is yeah, obviously advancing, you know, all the time. And now, obviously, we've got more sophisticated technology. But geolocators 10, 15 years ago were a very useful tool to try and pinpoint approximate areas of approximate locations of where these birds were wintering. And the Scottish work identified the sort of eastern part of the Atlas Mountains in, yeah, Algeria were the location for these birds that, okay, they tagged in Scotland. That's not to say that Irish birds are necessarily staying in the same location, yeah, but it's probably a safe bet that they're not too far away.
And it's hunting of thrushes, which is big in some parts of southern Europe. Is that having an impact maybe on
it? Could very well be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think hunting pressure is always something that's fairly difficult to quantify.
Yeah.
But I think research in France has certainly indicated that where the cause of death was known, 70% of cases were due to hunting.
Really?
Yes, yeah.
Are they an Annex 1 species in Europe?
They're not an Annex 1 okay, species, no. And ring ousel, like a lot of passerines in Ireland, they're not afforded that level of protection, I suppose. Right. But they are redlisted in Ireland due to significant declines in range and population. They've been redlisted for many years now. But unfortunately, that hasn't necessarily resulted in the conservation, okay, action that the, yeah, species needs. And
could that be something that maybe we in Europe could push for, the sort of a better conservation status for them, particularly,
yeah,
where our,
I mean,
Irish
if,
birds
if,
are?
If it helps to secure, I suppose, more support and more focused energy in terms of conservation, yeah, effort, then, you know, anything you could do to help achieve that, I think, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I think a lot of what we need to do for ring ousel, we already know, particularly from, you know, our counterparts in the UK, where they've done a lot of work looking at impacts of grazing pressure on the quality of the habitat in ring ousel territories. And, you know, fundamentally in Ireland, we've lost the species due to changes in our upland landscape and that deterioration in habitat quality and habitat extent that was formerly there. So, yeah,
and
bringing that back is not...
And it's been happening for years. It's been, yeah, happening under our noses in many ways.
In plain sight. Yeah. In plain sight, yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's that shifting baseline, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where I remember hearing and seeing ring ousel in parts of Donegal and,
yeah, yeah,
you know, 20 years ago.
No, I remember them in Wicklow.
You know, remember them in Wicklow. Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Alan Mee, I know, who's contributing to this, yeah, programme, surveyed them down in the Reeks in Kerry.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
so there's a lot of collective memory and, yeah, experience and joy, you know, yeah, in hearing and seeing, yeah, and monitoring ring ousel. And it's very, very sad to think that that may not be a possibility in the coming years, you know.
Are we missing birds? Because we only knew of one confirmed breeding pair in 2024, mm-hmm, up in Donegal. Are there birds possibly out there? Are we missing them?
it's quite possible, Eric. As you know, you can't be in all places, and certainly they are an elusive species too. Yeah. And every time you go out to survey a location, you may or may not hear the bird call. We have, as part of our methodology for the recent work in Donegal, used tape playback to try and elicit a call, because the concerns are that potentially males are less vocal because they don't have any nearest neighbours, for example.
If they're not competing for territory, they don't need to sing as much.
They may not need to sing as much. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so, you know, it's a sort of silent valley, as it were, which is very sad to think that the male is singing his heart out and not getting any response from his...
That's very... That's caught me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a silent valley.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. And to think that we've lost that in our lifetime is...
Yeah, the valleys are silent. Actually, I hadn't... Yeah, that's... all I can say, Sinead, is you've given me a great insight into a whole another aspect of this journey on discovering what has happened to ring ouzels. Because I saw one in April. That was the first one I'd seen in Ireland in a while, but it was a migratory bird moving through. There was other rare birds like red starts, and there was a red rump swallow and a purple heron. And it just got me thinking, you know, about the loss of ring ouzel. Mm. But your words there, the valleys are silent, has actually just, it sort of caught me there.
The ring ouzel story is a very sad story. Yeah. And one which, you know, we'd like to see a change in its fortunes, a reversal of that decline, but it will take a lot of change for that to happen. Yeah. And I think we're in, I suppose, a privileged position of knowing what we need to do, but it's just making it happen.
Yeah. Over the course of my birding life, I've travelled to many countries, experiencing rare and wonderful species. But my deepest connection has always been to Ireland. Back in the 1990s, I set up the Birds of Ireland News Service to alert others to rare visitors. I spent countless years conducting surveys, working to ensure that construction doesn't interfere with sensitive habitats. I've given talks and presentations across the country, brought both Irish and international birders on guided walks. I've written several books on Ireland's birds, and I've tried to share not just knowledge, but to instill a sense of wonder in our natural world and an urgency of protecting what we have. And I'm not alone. There are many people like me, people like Sinead, Killian, Alan and Rob, quiet custodians of our wild places. We've documented, we've informed, we've warned, but still the losses meant. Ireland has already lost species like the corn bunting as recently as the 1990s, and plants like the meadow saxifrage, last recorded in Dublin and Wicklow in the 1980s. Each one a thread pulled from the fabric of our natural heritage. We do not want the ring ouzel to be added to this list, because this bird is more than just rare. It's a hero of our uplands. It's a bird that belongs to the high places where few dare to nest. When it sings, it brings the hills to life. It reminds us that nature still holds power, still holds mystery. But this hero is in trouble. Not extinct, not yet, but close. As we've said, in the early 2020s, the breeding range of ring ouzel was restricted to a handful of isolated mountain valleys in Donegal, having vanished from former strongholds like Kerry, Wicklow, Leitrim and Waterford. So, when I heard that just one pair of ring ouzels had nested in Ireland in 2024, I contacted artist and birder Rob Vaughan for the latest update. Rob is a vital part of the ring ouzel survey team in Donegal, monitoring the last known valley where nesting has been proved. Sadly, Rob confirmed that by late May 2025, just one pair of breeding birds had been located once again. Rob, how are you?
Eric, how are you?
Been a long time.
Yeah, too long. God, what a beautiful morning.
Just after sunrise, but what an incredible setting.
Oh, it's stunning.
I took the long road north to Donegal, where, at dawn, in a remote, undisclosed location, I joined Rob on one of his surveys to locate that last pair.
We still have a bit of a trek to do.
Yes, yeah, you're telling me. How long is it?
We'll take our time today. Yeah. So, yeah, it's nice and dry. It hasn't rained in a few weeks, so we hopefully won't disappear into any bog holes.
Yeah.
And should be 40, 45 minutes.
That's your 40, 45 minutes, not my 45 minutes.
We might get a few nice birds along the way. There's some red grouse and there's sometimes some golden or even a white-tailed eagle floating around too. So
this is such a beautiful area, I have to say. I've you know, been touring around the last day or two, and it's a spectacular area. But we're going up into, you know, a deep valley here, looking for ring ouzel. But like, you know, I've been around some of the places. There's lots and lots of areas that look very similar. Like, what's special? Why is it this one last, like, little bastion of hope for ring ouzel?
There's many reasons for it. So, a lot of overgrazing, as you've probably seen as you've driven up here.
There
are a lot of sheep still in the lower valleys. There's also a huge amount of deer in all of the areas. So, ring ouzel, as well as breeding in the uplands on the mountains, they need a lot of heather for the nests. They then descend down once the chicks fledge. They descend down into the valleys looking for rowan, mountain ash, berries in the autumn time and late summer. And there's just no regenerative growth up here at all.
Okay, so it's not just about like where they nest up in the heights.
Yes.
It's actually the lower areas are as important
for
the success.
We also have issues with forestry plantations, which brings in magpies, hooded crows, that were never here beforehand. So we have had cases since we've started the annual monitoring where magpies have predated on ring ouzel nests and they would never have been here in the past. So it's a combination of many, many factors as to why they're decreasing so much.
You're part of the team up here now in Donegal monitoring the ring ouzels each summer, yeah?
Each summer, yes. Yeah. So Alan Mee is coordinating it for the last few years.
Yeah, I was talking to Alan a little while ago and he was explaining some of the things that's going on with the whole concept of ring ouzels and the problems they have. So he is monitoring the whole thing.
He is. He's involved in Donegal. He was down in Kerry a lot, down in the Killarney National Parks and the Reeks, but they haven't had any successful breeding or any definite pairs for the last several years.
So
he has focused all his efforts now in Donegal, where there have been pairs in the last 5 or 6 years and confirmed breeding at a couple of sites.
So what do you think of our chances?
There was a bird here 2 weeks ago. We had a female that we saw very, very well. And we had a male singing as we were wandering out of the valley.
So are they a confirmed pair?
Not a confirmed pair yet.
Okay.
They were
a
few hundred metres apart, but they were in locations where we heard them, saw them last year, where there was a confirmed pair.
Right. Well, look, we better start this long trek into the mountains.
Yes.
And so we'll get our gear together and we'll soldier on. Right.
As we climb higher, the wind picks up and the path gets meaner. Loose rock, tangled roots, and that kind of steep that makes your legs question your life choices. But we keep going, because somewhere up here, tucked into the folds of this mountain, is the last nesting pair of ring ouzels in Donegal.
It's a spectacular day, though, isn't it?
It's just gorgeous. Yeah, you can hear a grasshopper warbler in the background there. We're going to go for the little valley that you see at the top
yes,
there.
Yeah.
And then That's only the start.
Oh, good God, Rob, what are you going to do to me? What are you going to do to me?
Once we get there, we hit a little boggy area where there's often red grouse.
Yes.
And then we're going over the next little ridge as well.
Excellent.
And that'll bring us into the...
So we're going over another ridge.
Yes. Yeah. And then you get to a slightly smaller, but...
Yeah. They don't nest in easy places. No gentle slopes or open fields. They choose the wildest ridges, thick with heather, where even the sheep hesitate. It's like they know how rare they are, and they guard that rarity with altitude and silence. The anticipation builds with every step. We're scanning constantly, listening for that soft, fluty call, and then, just as we reach the ridge, we hear the alarm call.
Oh,
straight away,
yes,
there.
Yes, that's the chucking sound, isn't it?
The alarm call.
Yeah.
This is where we've had them now for the last couple of years.
Okay,
this exact spot. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, it's... Hang on. Is that...
The male.
Male singing off in the distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just giving it... Oh, that's...
So, that must be... That's more than likely... The female below. So
when
I was here 2 weeks ago, the female was
just in this area,
in the same spot here. We didn't have the male here. Yeah. He was a few hundred meters away the last time. So,
That's the first. Oh, I'm just thinking that's probably the first male ring ouzel I've heard singing in years.
Yeah,
I used to get them up in County Wicklow, and it was like an annual trip up to hear the ring ouzels.
Yeah.
God, that's
unfortunately I missed them in Wicklow. I never got to hear them in Wicklow.
Yeah, you're too young. That's what's wrong. That's what's wrong. God, that's incredible. Like there's a sort of a beauty of hearing that in the valley, especially in a place like this.
Oh, it's very melancholic, desolate.
Yeah, just there's a sadness about me listening to a ring ouzel again, and like it's something that there's something that this was part of every year.
Yeah.
Ah, that's and it's a long way off. That's a very distant.
Yes.
So, describe this particular habitat that we're just looking down on. Oh, hang on, there's the female. She just moved.
Yes, on the rock
there.
Down below. Yep.
God, that's beautiful. God, she's beautiful, isn't she?
Yeah.
What's so special about this area and this location in the valley?
Although it looks very similar to what we've set off from this morning, from around the car park, you'll see just looking at the heather here is
it's really
very deep.
Yes, yeah,
up over knee height.
Yeah,
so there's great cover for the nesting birds here.
Okay,
so they'll nest in underneath the heather. You've also got a little bit of short grass up on top, so we do have sheep still here, even though we're right on the boundary of the park. There's still some sheep and lots of deer up here, so the males will be like a blackbird hopping around.
Okay,
they'll forage just like a blackbird, taking worms from the grass up here. The females will be in the tussocks in the heather. They just tear out big chunks of mud and grass, and they'll sort through it for more grubs and worms and everything that they find. So you need those mixes of habitat. But if you also look down here, you get to see all of the mountain ash,
of course,
bits of rhone that are sprouting up.
So
because we have a huge hillside here, that's inaccessible to the sheep and deer.
Okay,
these trees are able to grow up. So once the chicks fledge, leave the nest, they are brought straight down the valley away from. They have the safety up here for the nest, and then they're brought down there where they immediately turn to berries. So looking down the scrub below, you can see just on the ledge below, there's bilberry.
Oh, there is. Yes.
So that's another great source for them in the autumn time as well.
Yes.
And that's something that the sheep go straight for, the deer will go straight for as well.
Of course.
So anywhere that's accessible, it's just devoid of all of these extra food sources.
So well, this whole habitat looks the same.
Yeah.
This is so inaccessible for sheep and for deer that, you know, you have all the layers that are required for successful breeding of ring ouzel.
Looking around the valley here, all of these hillsides have the same cover because they're so steep and it's so vast. You have this perfect bit of habitat. And when you look at other places that you pass, you might see patches of it where it's inaccessible to deer, but it's just one patch.
Yeah.
And then in other spots, you'll also have the conifer plantations right below
of
it,
where
you'll have farms just below it where there's trees and there's magpie nests or hooded crow nests in below it, and that's just predator
Oh, it's perfect. Predators. Yeah, that's exactly what they need. Yeah,
so
yeah.
You have a mix of the isolation up here and the perfect habitat.
Yeah, wow. And it really is. It's like when you create the habitat, you know, you get the species.
You do. So what we also found when we were doing the surveys, we started in 2020, that Merlin were nesting here in the valley, and looking around, there's no trees here.
Yeah.
So for the first time in 40 years, Merlin were recorded nesting on the ground.
Okay.
And there's actually three pairs of Merlins ground nesting here within within eyesight of here. So we have a pair that have nested for the last 3 years just below us in the heather, right down the bottom of the valley. The male often, when we're up here, the male often flies by to give his alarm call.
Yeah.
So we might get him later on. And then just across the valley there, just in the next little, those two little valleys over there, the two little dips that you see in the hillside.
We're not going over there, sure enough. No, thank you.
We can if you
no,
like.
No, it's okay. We've gone far enough,
But just over there, there's another two pairs of Merlin. And they, again, were found just by being out looking for a ring ousel. So walking around at dawn, you were disturbing Merlin.
Yes.
They were coming in, alarm calling, because we were too close to their nest.
Okay.
And it's just a result of steep habitat that the deer and the sheep haven't been able to access, and the heather growth is nice and conducive to it. So we also have red grouse in good numbers up here. There's snipe, quite often you'll hear them. They're probably a bit too high up for snipe now, but on the walk down you can hear hear them
doing that wickety-wickety call. It's a beautiful sound
chipping away on the hillside. It's a great sound. Usually in the evening times, if I'm coming down after sunset, they just all kick off, and it's just
incredible.
A magnificent walk.
It's incredible. Like, and you know, I have to say, I've known you for a long time. Like, the work that the likes of you and Alan and others are doing, you know, to give us all this information about our last Irish ring ousels and how we can possibly turn the whole thing around, possibly, before we lose another species to Ireland, it's incredible. I'm in awe of your dedication.
But we know that there are still birds appearing.
Yeah.
That gives us confidence that if the habitat is protected, if the habitat is enhanced, that these birds are still out there.
There is a possibility that it can be turned around.
It can be turned around,
Okay.
But we need to act very, very fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
That when these populations are gone,
they're gone.
They're gone.
Urgent action is needed if we are to prevent the ring ousel from disappearing as a breeding species in Ireland. Protecting this bird means safeguarding the upland habitat it relies on, steep, remote slopes with dense vegetation where few others nest. Conservationists, researchers, landowners, and local communities all have a role to play. But the state must do its part too. That means supporting habitat restoration, funding long-term monitoring, and ensuring that land use policies work in harmony with biodiversity goals. Only through shared responsibility and leadership from the top can we keep the ring ousel song alive in Ireland's wild places.
Eric Dempsey is my name. I have a meeting with Minister O'Sullivan at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Kate, just one moment, sir. We'll check you here on the system. Oh, there you are. Okay. Going
to in early June, I visited Dáil Éireann to meet with Christopher O'Sullivan, Minister of State at the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, with special responsibility for nature, heritage and biodiversity. I wanted to share my sadness at the decline of the ring ousel. But I also wanted to discuss what actions we might take together to ensure that we will continue to hear the ring ousel sing in our uplands.
It's devastating. It's devastating, and I can hear, Eric, in your voice the place that a bird like a ring ousel has in your heart. You know, because you've heard them sing in the wild. I've seen them in the wild. I've one of the most special days birding in my life was down in Mizenhead, where it was a really special day in April. It had ring ousel, we had yellow wags, we had a hoopoe, but we had multiple ring ousel, and one of the ring ousel was a stunning adult male. And it just, I remember it down in Mizen looking up at this rock face, and it's exactly how I'd imagine to see them on the breeding grounds. and it was just standing there puffing out its chest, and you could see that beautiful white band across its breast. And you almost expected to hear it singing because the habitat looked perfect. But obviously it was a migrant. So they are an absolute stunning bird. And the way you've described their demise and the loss of the species is absolutely heartbreaking, and it's devastating. So the question then is, for us as a country and as a state, can we intervene? Can we turn this around?
And
look, you mentioned, you described them as the sexy projects there in terms of those reintroduction programs of white-tailed eagle and osprey and golden eagle and red kite.
Sexy in the fact that they get the headlines.
They do get the headlines, but there is also, I suppose, work going on with perhaps that don't refer specifically to birds of prey.
Yes.
So if you are, I know you're well familiar with the Corncrake Life Project.
Of course, absolutely.
And that's a project where we had a species, perhaps not in the same level of peril as the ring ouzel are, but certainly their numbers were dwindling, and they were dwindling fast. And with a few interventions and this unbelievable cooperation, I think it's the best example of cooperation between conservationists and farmers,
yes,
who are all, everyone will tell you traditionally they're supposed to be at loggerheads. Here they were inside having cups of tea with each other, discussing how they were going to bring this bird back from the brink. And they've succeeded. They've increased their numbers by 40%. So that's under the Corncrake Life Project. And we're also seeing a similar, I suppose, project that doesn't get the headlines. And that would be the breeding waders.
Yes.
Again, you're familiar with that happening in Loch Ree. They've just, on Thursday, I'm going to Mayo to release one of the heads there to Dunlin. But essentially, through a bit of predation control, through a bit of fencing, etc., they're managing to see numbers of certain waders, not all, but certain waders come back from very low levels.
Well, I see that even in my local habitat there at Kilcool,
exactly,
where you have up to 100 pairs of lapwings now nesting, in the area that is fenced off and properly protected. So things can be done.
Things can, and it can be transformed quickly. And Anna Marsh in Mayo is always an example I use of how quickly things can be transformed from what was a desolate bit of habitat. You, Dave Sotheby, and a few other dedicated conservationists, simple bit of predator control, managed grazing, and a bit of fencing. And I remember being up there, ashamedly, to try twitch a red-winged blackbird. Eric, I dipped
shame,
in it.
Shame.
But I went up there, and the sound of skylark was deafening. There was snipe displaying. There was snipe on every post.
Yeah.
There was, obviously, the red fowler up there as well. It was it hit me hard because I didn't know that this is what a healthy ecosystem should look like. And it's always stayed with me. But a small bit of intervention has created something magical. So coming back to the ring ouzel.
Yes.
Obviously, we get led by the science on this.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that within NPWS and Sinead Cummins, we have an incredible group of scientists who have researched this. And the first thing to say is, having consulted with them, obviously, is when the first thing I did was, it may not be too late.
Yeah.
There may be time for intervention, but it has to happen urgently.
That's the point. There's an urgency to this.
There's a desperate urgency. And the EIP projects, the European Innovation Project, and the LIFE project I spoke about, because of the lead in times and the amount of preparatory work that has to go to get something like that up off the ground, it'll probably be too late for ring ouzel.
Yeah.
So what we're suggesting is that we look at, and it's something that I will absolutely pledge to ensuring that we try to get up and running, is a ring ouzel recovery project.
Brilliant.
So this would be urgent. We bypass all the preparatory elements of your other conservation projects. This would be done directly by NPWS with regional staff and with NPWS staff to look at bespoke ways that we can see the recovery of this incredible bird. We also, outside of, you probably heard of ACRES and the Department of Agriculture environmental projects, environmental schemes. NPWS actually have their own farmland schemes. So that is another avenue for funding and in terms of trying to look at bespoke measures and management mechanisms to bring back this bird. So look, you'll know far more than me in terms of what can be done. Just an example, I was in Glenveagh National Park recently.
Yes.
And as you know, grazing pressure is a huge...
This is the big issue that everybody, when you ask, what is the one thing that could possibly turn this around instantly? Everybody says grazing. Mm. Grazing is one of the biggest issues because ring ouzels need a mosaic of plants. They need the heather. They need bilberry. They need things like mountain ash. They need some short grass And grazing, unfortunately, takes that understory, breaks up that mosaic of habitat. So grazing is like one of the key issues that everybody seems to highlight. In the areas that we've identified as the last hold, is it possible to negotiate to remove grazing stock from these areas? I know National Parks and Wildlife are also trying to control deer numbers in these areas. Is it possible to do anything like that?
So where, big ask, where that last breeding pair is in Donegal is very close to Glenbay National Park.
It is, yeah.
As we know, the beauty of national parks, Eric, is that the state owns them. Okay, so by owning them, we can control the activity that happens within them. And what they are doing there, and I have to commend the team in Glenbay National Park, because they seem to have stumbled upon a really good method of managing grazing. First of all, they've no trespassing sheep.
Yeah.
So they don't have an issue as they have in other national parks where sheep from neighbouring lands trespass and they overgraze the land there. Secondly, they really have stumbled upon an effective deer management control. And what I saw firsthand was you're getting natural regeneration. In the lower areas, you're getting natural regeneration of the pioneer species like birch. But in the upper areas, you're getting natural regeneration of heather. And it's incredible to see it, Eric. Where you have the fencing keeping out the grazers, you can see the upper areas devoid of any type of heather or bilberry. In the area within the fencing, you have heather, you have bilberry, which you know is an important food source for the ring ouzel, and it is coming back. Now, that site is not a million miles away from where those ring ouzel are breeding.
It's within spitting distance. I travelled up with Rob Vaughan not too long ago. So, you know, is it possible to lift up the fence posts and extend the area?
So that's it. And a key goal for me as minister is to increase our acquisitions. In other words, purchase land that we think is suitable for conservation and regeneration projects. And if there's an opportunity there, perhaps we will. And just to say thank you, Eric, for the work that you do in highlighting the peril of so many of our bird species, particularly today, the ring ouzel, which I really hope that we can see come back from the brink.
Thank you very much for taking the time to meet me.
Thanks, Eric.
Will these actions be enough to save our Irish ring ouzels? Hopefully, it's not too little, too late. There is a glimmer of hope, as Rob Vaughan confirmed that in June, he had located a second breeding pair further up that remote Donegal Valley. How sad it would be for our nation if our valleys are silent in the future, devoid of the song of ring ouzels. We can only hope that the planned conservation measures might just save them from the brink of extinction. But only time will tell. My dream is that the silent valleys we now know will once again echo to the song of the ring ouzel.
The Ring Ouzel was presented by Eric Dempsey. More details on the website rte.ie/Mooney. We'll be back again at the same time next week. Until then, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.